challenge. And it was good for me. I don't know about you. Was it good for you? Yeah. Rethink. Rethink life. Rethink the way we see what Jesus said in the Beatitudes. Wow. Caused me to pause. And I like the way they did it with this, blessed are the poor in spirit. Like, what does that mean? It's kind of hard to wrap your hands about. What does it mean to be poor in spirit? Well, sometimes it's helpful to think of the opposite of the Beatitudes. And he says, blessed are those who are not prideful. So the poor in spirit are not prideful people. Blessed are the poor in spirit. They challenge us to rethink. You might say, and I said, what possible influence could the Beatitudes have had on the audience that Jesus was speaking to in the first century? Really? Do you think it's possible that Jesus' sermon in the first century impacted the audience that he spoke to? Did it impact the world that he spoke to? Let me just say it this way. The first century world was a mess. The first century world in which Jesus lived, the first century world in which Jesus ministered, saw a political scene much worse than the political scene that we think we're seeing today. In the first century world, prejudice was blatant. Not subtle, prejudice was blatant, and Jesus spoke into that world. In the first century world, idolatry was rampant. In the first century world, it was violent. There were whippings, there were scourgings, there was crucifixion. Violence was more or less typical. In the first century world, the government and the religious leaders were in bed together. There was much corruption. And I want you to notice about what Jesus did as he addressed the first century world. He addressed individuals that were there listening to him. And he said some things that were bizarre, that were unusual, that caused that first century world to rethink the way they were thinking life. And he said, in the midst of this chaotic, distorted, messed up world, what is it supposed to be like? Well, Jesus says, you're supposed to be poor in spirit. He's saying that to that confused, messed up world, which means you're not supposed to be prideful. To the first century world, he said, blessed are those who mourn, which means you don't develop an attitude of indifference. To the first century world, he says, blessed are the meek and humble. That's what Jesus said to that messed up world. He didn't say, blessed are the arrogant. To the first century world, he says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. He didn't say, blessed are those who hunger after fortune. To the first century world, he said, blessed are the merciful. He didn't say, don't consider what others are thinking about. To the first century world, he said, listen, in that corrupt world, blessed are the pure in heart. He didn't say, blessed are those who seek pleasure. In the first century world, Jesus said, blessed, yes, in this violent, corrupt world where there was all kinds of messy stuff going on between political leaders and religious leaders, Jesus said to that audience as he preached to them on the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers. He didn't say, blessed are the agitators. Jesus said even, blessed are you when you're persecuted for doing right, persecuted for serving God. He didn't say, blessed are you when you are worldly and you reject God. Whew. Can I tell you, I think Jesus' message is just as relevant for us today in 21st century America as it was 2,000 years ago in first century Palestine. This is relevant stuff. This connects, and it makes me rethink the way Jesus calls us to be, what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. I always used to think, That Sermon on the Mount, that's pretty easy stuff. You know, you can all get a handle on that. I don't think that anymore. This is hard stuff. So how do we live out the Beatitudes? By the way, I had cataract surgery. It's great, but I still have to wear reading glasses. Anyway, thank you. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that salt and light can still make a difference in today's world? Do you believe that? Do you think that salt and light can really impact our messed up, perverted, distorted culture? If it could impact the messed up, distorted, perverted culture of the first century, I'm here to tell you today that it'll still fix up our messed up, distorted, perverted world today. I'm saying to you, we need to rethink what's really important. Both salt and light, one of the things that they have in common, both salt and light, they both need to be different from what they're a part of to be effective. They're different from what they're a part of. Both salt and light need to penetrate the environment in which they live, in which they work, in order to be effective. So here we are, Christians, brothers and sisters. I'm going to ask you a question. As we look at this Sermon on the Mount, we're going to be very quickly looking at Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 and following. In your experience, are Christians so separate from the world today that they can't make any difference in the world? Are they so separate from the world, so isolated from the world, that they can't make any difference in the world? Or have Christians become so much a part of the world that they're not different enough to impact the world and hence make a difference? And so there's the tug of war that we have. Are we so isolated? Are we so far apart from the world in our churches, in our belief system, that we don't interact with the world and so we can no longer impact the world? Or have we got so much of the world in the church that we look just like the world and so the world says, hey, I'm as good as they are? What I'm saying in a different way is, does anything in us as a people, does anything us as a church distinguish us from the world? Is your life salty? Is your life characterized by light? Or do the people that you associate with and that I associate on the daily basis say, hey, they're just like me? Jesus's call is to be different from our associates, different from those that are around us. Well, how do you measure that difference? We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But one of the big ways that we measure it, Dwight alluded to this a moment ago, is how we spend our money. That's a huge way that we as Christians need to be different from the rest of the world. So let me ask you a personal question. As we think about the way we're spending our money, what if everyone in our church, everyone, gave with the same degree of generosity that you give to the church? They were every bit as generous or as stingy as you are. Whew. How would church be? How would our budget be? And is the way that we give any different than the way the world gives to their charities? If everybody gave exactly the way that you do, exactly the way you did just a few minutes ago, would our weekly church budget increase or would it decrease? How do you treat the poor, the marginalized, the disenfranchised in our society? And if everyone treated the poor, the marginalized, the disenfranchised the way you do, would the love of Jesus be more evident or less evident in the world today? So I'm not only talking about what we do in the church collection plate, I'm talking about what we do and how we handle life in the day in and day out situation. And so another way of saying it, I'm looking at our checkbook, is are we salt and are we light, or are we just like all the people that are around us? That's a tough question for me. That's a convicting question for me. Jesus says, you are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. Many years ago, we were still living in Vineland at that time. I went to Marcacci Meats, still in existence in Vineland. I bought a ham. I had some country ham. We'd been visiting the South, Catherine's parents, and somebody said, you know, you can cure a ham yourself. And so I went to Marcacci Meats, and I bought a ham, and we didn't have online in those days, but I picked up a recipe, and I packed that ham because I wanted some country ham. And I packed that ham, and I think it had sugar, and I know it had salt. And I put it up in my attic, my hot attic, in the summer. And I just let it cure up there. And I don't know how long it was up there, but it was up there a long while. And then we got it down. And you know what that salt did? That salt, it changed the ham. It penetrated the ham. It created great flavor in that ham. And from that point on, when we got it out of the attic, when we started cutting it, yeah, you started the crusty, you cut the crusty stuff off. But then you didn't have to refrigerate that ham like you have to refrigerate your hams. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. You are supposed to be different than the surroundings. You're supposed to be different. You're supposed to penetrate. You're supposed to add flavor to those that are around you. Jesus isn't asking for volunteers. Would you be willing to be salt of the earth? He says, you are the salt of the earth. In this corrupt society in which they were living, this violent society in which they were living, he says, you're supposed to be different from the world. He says, now be careful because the salt can lose its saltiness and you can become just like the world. But his call is, you be different than the world. You add flavor. You add preservative to the world. The way that he cites this passage or this verse in the Greek, it's in the emphatic. And what he's really saying is you and only you are the salt of the earth. Don't expect salt to come from somebody else, somewhere else. You and only you are the salt of the earth. And so if the followers of Jesus aren't adding this preservative, aren't adding this flavoring, then where is it going to come from? If Christian people aren't making the difference, then the world is going to continue to become more rotten and more contaminated and more polluted. It's going to rot even faster is what Jesus is saying. And so he says to that Christians that are alive in that Roman world, be salt. You are the salt of the earth. Be different than the people around you. Salt was an absolutely essential part of that ancient world. It preserved meats, it preserved fish, and many of Jesus's followers were fishermen, and they knew what he meant. They packed their meats in salt. They packed their fish in salt to carry it a long journey because they didn't have refrigerated trucks. I am salt. This is my identity. You are salt. This is your identity. I am here to hinder the decay of the world and to emphasize the qualities of Jesus and not be like the world. What about my influence? My influence upon this world and your influence upon this world depends upon my being distinctive, my being different, rather than my being identical to the rest of the world. My identity. Number two, I am light. Jesus said, I am the light of the world, about himself. And then he also says in this passage, you are the light of the world. Again, he didn't say, wouldn't you like to be light of the world? Or have you ever thought about being the light of the world? You know what the world really needs right now isn't a Coke. What the world really needs right now is Jesus. What the world needs right now is light. And he says, you are the light of the world. You are my followers. You are to be different than the light than the rest of the world. You know, I've told you what it says. Let's just read it. Matthew chapter 5. Verses 13, 14, 15. Listen, you are the light of the world. If the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under men's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a bushel. Hide it under a bushel? No, I'm going to let it shine. You don't light a lamp and hide it under a bushel. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. My function, I dispel darkness. Your purpose, dispel darkness. Don't be like the rest of the world. Light was absolutely essential to the ancient world, just as it is essential to today. Have you ever experienced complete and total darkness? You know how frightening it is. Many of your children sleep with a nightlight in their rooms because they are afraid of the dangers that can come when there's darkness. And I'm here to tell you today that darkness covers this earth. Sin covers this earth. Light exposes sin. You are the light of the world. In 1977, some of you may remember this, some of you weren't even born yet, but I remember it. July 13th, there was a blackout in New York City. The power grid went down, part of it. Lightning knocked out much of the power to the city. Time magazine called it a night of terror. Mobs smashed windows, hauled away merchandise. Some 4,500 people were arrested after doing some $61 million worth of damage. This was 1977. That's a real picture of what life is like when we're cast into darkness. It's craziness. It's sin. Sin runs rampant. Evil people do evil things. And Jesus says, the world is shrouded in darkness. The world is shrouded in these attributes, in these attitudes over here. And he says, you're not like that. When you live in darkness, you have no ray of light. You can't even find your way home. Many are lost and don't even know it. And so what is our purpose here? Our purpose here is to point the way back to God. I like this. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. How I wonder where what you are. Let me tell you what. Christians are to be the light that shows the way to Jesus. We're not to be like the world that's around us. And he goes on to say, you're to be like a city that's set up on a hill. And when people see it, it gives light. The implication is, I've got the light. I found out who Jesus is, and so I'm not going to hide that. My influence on the world depends upon my being visible and not concealed. I think what Jesus is saying, if I can put it into everyday language, is Jesus is saying, I want you to live your life in such a way that you dispel darkness. I want you to live your life in such a way that people notice that you are different than they are. I'm going to give three quick examples.